You're listening to NBC Sports Radio. Weekends. This is Speaking of Sports
with Jim Daniels
on NBC Sports Radio, where every day is game day.
And now,
it's Jim Daniels.
Hey, thanks for making us a part of your day. Sure appreciate that. It's NBC Sports Radio, NBCSportsRadio.com. I'm Jim Daniels here every Sunday morning with a little show called Speaking of Sports. This is where we like to push the box score aside and take a slightly deeper look at some of these stories and individuals that are making news in the sports world. Not so much about the numbers, but a little bit more about the folks that are involved. And some of the stories I've got, we're getting close to Halloween, so I've got a haunted story that I had on my own show a little earlier that I want to share with you here on this show as well. That's coming up a little bit. A mysterious injury is plaguing one of the NFL's elite defensive players. Tell you who that is coming up in just a moment and some of the problems facing that team. But first, we start with, and again, it's not always about the numbers, and this is not so much about the numbers as it is about just an unbelievable play. Now, we've seen some crazy things in college athletics over the years. We know in 1982, John Elway's Stanford Cardinal band walking out in the field, this Cal-Stanford game. We've seen that many times, the run back going through the guys in the band trying to get to the end zone. The absolute mass hysteria in that game. Then there was the Doug Flutie Hail Mary game way back in the day. That was, I think, just a couple of years later is when that one happened. So, you know, that's fantastic stuff as well. But what you had in this Michigan-Michigan State game, absolutely unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. You've got Michigan with the lead, about to pull off the upset against against Sparty, that is undefeated. And all they've got to do really is run out the clock. They've got about 10 seconds left in the game. I think it's exactly 10 seconds left in the game. All they got to do is run out the clock, but it's fourth down, so they've got a kick. Punter gets the ball, hits him right in the hands, exactly where it's supposed to. Exactly where it's supposed to hit him. He fumbles the ball, and instead of just falling down on the ball, no. He tries to kick it. He goes Gayro Yepremian on everybody. Tries to kick the ball. Well, Sparty did a great job of rushing the kicker in that one, and about half a dozen guys scoop up the ball and convoy it into the end zone for the win, the touchdown, the clock expires, and Michigan State wins. Absolutely amazing. Do you have that clip? Do you have it ready? All right, fire that. Let's do it one more time.
They are going to punt on fourth and two, and the snap is dropped by O'Neal, and he kicks it sideways, and it's picked up by the Spartans. Up to the 20, the 10, the 5, into the end zone. Kidding me!
Unbelievable.
Jalen Watts Jackson.
Touchdown is confirmed. The game is over.
It's just insane. And you've got to see the video that goes with it to absolutely believe it. It's just absolutely nuts. Rick Horro is going to be on the program here coming up in just a few minutes as we do Speaking of Sports, but also want to share this with you, too, as the PGA Tour is winding to an end. It's pretty much over after all of the majors. That's when the big stuff is over, but there's still the Fries.com tour, which is going on today. But we had the opportunity to speak to Hank Haney from Golf Channel. You want to talk some golf, this is a guy you can talk about for sure. And Hank was out on the West Coast. With Omega for a special Omega Golf Clinic. It was hosted at the Mission Viejo Country Club, which is part of a golf series that Omega is hosting across the country to help grow the game of golf. You know, for a guy like Hank, it's got to be fun when people step out on the putting green and say, oh my gosh, Hank Haney's out there. But what I want to know, Hank, should golfers, do you need to go to HankHaney.com to find out how you can get involved in the Hank Haney Omega Golf events?
Well, I hope they do. It's always fun for me to teach. I mean, it's something that I've done for 39 years now, so I've given a lot of golf lessons. But it's amazing that this has actually been my job, to be honest with you. It's fun to help people. It's fun to see them improve, and especially doing Omega events. I mean, Omega is a great sponsor of golf. They're a huge sponsor, obviously, for the PGA of America with the Ryder Cup and the PGA Championship. And now with the Olympics coming up, having golf back in the Olympics again, that's pretty cool. And Omega's been a sponsor of the Olympics for many, many years. So it's a great association for me. I love teaching golf, and And it was fun out in California. I was at Mission Viejo Country Club, which is where Marco Mira grew up.
Right.
And I was doing a little reminiscing when I was there about how lucky I was to have Mark as a student, because if it wasn't for him, nobody'd know who Hank Haney was.
Well, I'm not so sure about that. But Marco Mira down in the OC, no question about that. PGA Tour still riding high coming off that President's Cup victory, but there are many feel-good stories from this past season of the PGA Tour, like Australia's Jason Day. But the feel-good story for American golfers has got to be Jordan Spieth. Not to overstate it, but he's captivated the world with his dominating performance. I mean, this was a season for the ages, was it not?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, he's a phenomenal player at such a young age. Well, all three of the top players are, Roy McIlroy, Jason Day, and Jordan Spieth. It's just a great place that golf is in to have a big three like this and have them all be so young and such great guys. It's just the golf they played this year was amazing. Jordan Spieth in the majors, though, I mean, you know, coulda, woulda, shoulda, but I mean, he could have won all four of them. He was something else, but winning the Masters, the U.S. Open is pretty good stuff.
Hank Haney is our guest from Golf Channel. We watched as Jack and Arnie battle it out. We watched as Tiger and Phil battle it out. Now it looks like Spieth and McIlroy are set to become the next generation of superstars on the tour. Tiger and Jack really set the bar extremely high. Which one of these young up-and-coming golfers do you believe has the game to challenge some of the biggest names in the sport like Snead, Nicklaus, and Woods?
Well, I think you have to have the game. You have to have the mentality, too. And you know, I think arguably the most driven one and the one that is the most impressive mentally. I mean, all three of those players are phenomenal, but it's just hard to look past Jordan Spieth. I mean, he's just such a great, great competitor, and it just seems like he's so driven to win. You think that when you look at him, you just kind of see that the longevity has a good chance of being there. You know, of course, he's young, but he's never had a health issue. Jason Day's had some health issues. Roy McIlroy is a tremendous ball striker, you know, as good as Jason Day on that level, but not, the putter that Jordan Spieth is. I mean, Jordan Spieth's the best putter in the world, and he's improved his ball striking tremendously in the last year, and I think if that trend just continues at all, he's going to be really, really tough. But, you know, these records are a long way off. When we were looking at Tiger Woods, in his pursuit of Jack Nicklaus's record, we kind of thought, oh, you know, he can reach that. But, things happen, and it's obviously a long career to accomplish something like Jack Nicklaus did with 18 majors and 19 second-place finishes.
Yeah, no question about that. Hank Haney is our guest, and Hank is a golf instructor. What do you think of Jordan's putting eye on the hole instead of the ball? Crazy, yeah?
Yeah, that's it's definitely unique. You'll see more people trying it, I'm sure. as good as it works for him, generally you don't see great putters that are doing something exotic like that, but it definitely works for Jordan Spieth. And you know, it's hard to argue with the fact that the way he's putted the last couple of years, and it hasn't just, you know, it's just not a fluke when you do it 2 years in a row like he's done it, or an aberration. I mean, it's the real thing, and he's been the best putter in golf the last couple of years, using a style, like you said. He looks at the hole from certain distances. Usually when he's close, he looks at the hole when he putts. But where he's great is from 15 to 25 feet. He holds more of those putts that are difference makers than anybody playing the game of golf.
Yeah, that whole look at the whole thing instead of the ball is absolutely bizarre. But grand news from the PGA Tour this week as well. Six-time major champion Lee Trevino, he headlines the latest group of inductees into the PGA of America Hall of Fame. It's a class that's also going to include the posthumous induction of Payne Stewart, who is a huge fan as well as a player favorite. But really, also jockeying for position every week was Lee Trevino back in the day against Jack and Arnie. And, you know, I mean, he won the PGA Championship in 74 and 84, a pair of U.S. Opens and Open Championships. He's also a part of golf's folk tales, too. I mean, I heard that he used to take on amateur businessmen with a shovel, a rake, a Coke bottle, and stuff like that for money. You ever hear that one, Hank?
Oh, yeah, I think it was a Dr. Pepper bottle, but I have heard that. And I think the stories are true. I mean, he's an incredibly talented guy. You know, the way he played golf and with his unique style, it was just amazing. What a great ball striker. When you list the greatest ball strikers of all time, I mean, one of them that comes to mind is Lee Trevino. Mm-hmm. And what a great ambassador to the game of golf.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, just unbelievable. So it's a great, well-deserved honor that the PGA of America is putting Lee Trevino in the Hall of Fame.
Hank, back to Omega here for just a second. James Bond, or actually Daniel Craig, is 007, is back in theaters soon with the new film Spectre. Now, one of your sponsors, Omega, also sponsors the film. I saw that on your website. Do you think that you could help develop some James Bond weapons out of golf clubs for the next film?
That would be pretty cool. I love those movies, so I'd be willing to try for sure. But I think I'll stick to golf.
Probably the best choice, too. All right, Hank Haney, great to have Hank Haney on the program here and talk a little bit about the PGA Tour and how things are going moving forward. Coming up next in the program, we've got the professor Rick Horrell is going to join us live, and we'll talk about the business, the deal-making of sports. That's coming up next. NBC Sports Radio and NBCSportsRadio.com. Glad you dialed us up. It's NBC Sports Radio. This is Speaking of Sports. I'm your host, Jim Daniels. We're here every Sunday morning doing this with you. And let's make a statement. Fall is here, and the Home Depot's guaranteed low prices on paint have made updating any room in your house more affordable than ever. Exclusively at the Home Depot is Behr Premium Plus paint and primer in one. With an easy-to-clean finish, this durable paint can save you more time and money with fewer coats. Visit homedepot.com/paint for details. The Home Depot, more saving, more doing. That's our friends there. Now we flip on the telephone and find one of our friends. Boy, I don't know what part of the world he's in, but he's here to talk the business of sports. It's the Professor Rick Horrell. Good morning, sir.
Indianapolis, an amazing 55-52 Rutgers win over a Indiana team that gave up halfway through the third quarter, 25-point comeback, and now the Colts and the Patriots.
Dun dun dun!
Yeah,
exactly. You want to give us a prediction in this one?
Patriots 72, Colts 4.
That's right in line with pretty much every other analyst and expert that I've spoken to over the past 4 or 5 days. Look, the Patriots have been downplaying this game, and I know that you're close to these guys. You're a New England guy. You're friends with Mr. Kraft, and everyone from the top down has been saying, no revenge, just another game, no big deal, baloney. They've had this one circled on the calendar for a long time. These are the whistleblowers, and with a dinged up Andrew Luck, I think you're right. It may be 70-0.
Let's watch the fourth quarter if the game's out of hand. That'll be an interesting time. Let's see the last touchdown. I know we're not supposed to talk about betting and odds, although with fantasy sports, who knows where the line is.
Mm-hmm.
But let's see those last meaningless kneel downs. Let's see if they're really touchdowns. That's a possibility this
Indeed.
Week.
Indeed. Let's stay with the NFL, shall we, Rick? The NFL International is where we want to go. More games, more countries. That means more revenue, of course. That's got to be one of the reasons why they're doing this. But looks like now, between now and 2025, we may see games in Mexico, Germany, Canada. Look, I know this is about expanding the brand, but, I mean, do we really think that we're going to be sending teams to Mexico, Germany, and Canada on a permanent basis, maybe by 2025?
Well, not necessarily, but we don't know until we activate. That's the big term. And, of course, the NFL is having their owners' meeting a decision to pass a resolution to play games outside the United States through 2025, including awareness, including fan fests and other things. They've made a commitment to basically look at Mexico, to look at where to go with the Pro Bowl, to play more games in Britain, and also to go to Germany. They've made that commitment that they're actually going to look at an activation plan, and there will be some discussions about who does that plan and how they do it. And there's an agency we'll be talking about that soon. And the bottom line of all of that is that they're making money, not just the television rights, but the awareness and merchandise, etc. I'll be over there next week. I'll call you from over there. The Yahoo game, the first ever exclusively streamed Bills-Jaguars early morning window game, is huge, not just because Yahoo spent millions for the rights, but to offer free wide global service for the NFL. They're not stupid. They realize that if they put Yahoo in an empowered position, they may come back and be a bidder. for these rights the next time around, and that's exactly why they're doing it, and it's going to be a big week next week. I'm excited.
It's a big month for sports. October always is. The NHL has started, and NBA is ready to start. But let's talk baseball for just a second. For the first ever postseason series between the Cubs and the Cardinals, wow, the hype was crazy, and the Cubs wound up delivering the victory over the Cardinals. Unthinkable. A lot of people, including this guy, thought that the Cardinals would be representing the National League in the World Series. That's not the case. The Cubs are now taking on the Mets. They lose the first one. A great performance by Harvey. But you know what? I want to skip past this Mets series and ask you, because we're talking about just how much money things start to go for, the price, the secondary market of things. If the Cubs were to just make it to the World Series, those ticket prices and the secondary market are going to be astronomical, aren't they?
They ought to sell it like real estate. There were companies, by the way, that tried to do some of this. College company is already doing it, where you actually buy a lease to a piece of a bleacher standing room only spot for, let's say, game four of the World Series, because you already know it's three weekends from now, and if you get there, great. If you don't, then you lose the deal. There are a lot of people that would do that. Bottom line was over $200 for standing room anyway, just to be in that stadium. That's going to be a deal where, assuming they get by the Mets, big assumption after last night, I'll be there too. It'll be really kind of fun. And by the way, the Cubs won not only on the field, but their value, according to Forbes, is about $1.8 billion now. The Cardinals at 1.4, sixth. Nobody agrees with those specific kinds of numbers, but for the first time in history, Cubs beat the Cardinals in a postseason. It's because the first time they've ever played, but still.
Yeah, but still. Compensation for college, coaches, reaching an all-time high. How about this? USA Today reports Nick Saban, $7.09 million. $7.01 million, that's for Jim Harbaugh. And apparently the average for these Division I, is this right? Do I have this right from the Horror Sports Brief? Just over $2 million is the average for a Division I football coach?
That is correct.
Whew.
Now, if Harbaugh were at like 7.04, maybe he would have been able to manage a last-minute punt a little better. But that's another entirely different story.
Boy, is it.
Here's the bottom line. 128 FBS schools football-wise, up more than 110% since 2006. And listen, everybody's talking about how exorbitant these numbers are, but if you compare it to a COO of a $100 million a year revenue-producing corporation, it is well in line, even smaller. Remember, those guys get stock options. These guys don't. The only people that are upset about these numbers maybe are the chemistry professors, but you know, if you're going to bring in $100 million, you ought to get the money too.
Yeah, you know, the chemistry professors aren't bringing in that kind of cash. When they do, I'm sure we're all going to know about it. Rick Horro is our guest talking the business of sports. The fantasy futures, you might want to call this one. Look, at these guys are making so much money, DraftKings and FanDuel, these guys. Now, there's all kinds of talk about insider trading. We hear that Las Vegas has said, look, no more. Are these guys going to be able to survive all of this?
Well, yeah, the hearings are a lot more intense and will be very, very significant. It's not just about taxation, which it would have been originally. Mm-hmm. Now it's about the whole nature of why they are different than gambling. Remember, it's certainly legal, but Congress could change the rules if they wanted to. And the bottom line is, when you spend $500 million on advertising and you flood the market so prolifically and you talk a bit about gambling in the language that it sounds like gambling, then you got to stand up and take notice. But it is a game of skill, and everybody's talking about it differently, so the game hasn't played out yet. We'll see more about this in the next few weeks.
He's the professor. We'll talk to you next week. Rick Horro, thanks for being with us once again, my friend.
See you from London next week. It'll
All right.
Fun.
Well, expecting that long-distance collect call. More of Speaking of Sports is rolling your way next. We hope you'll stay put. It's NBC Sports Radio and NBCSportsRadio.com.
This is Speaking of Sports
with Jim Daniels
on NBC Sports Radio, where every day is game day.
And now,
it's Jim Daniels.
This is Speaking of Sports on NBC Sports Radio and NBCSportsRadio.com. Thanks for making the choice to switch us on. We certainly appreciate that. Check out the Monroe Shocktober sale going on at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase four select combinations of Monroe Shocks for the price of three after the mail-in rebate. Sweet, right? O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices. That's every day for you. All right, time for us to dig into something else here on Speaking of Sports. And again, we like to dig deeper here and get outside the box score a little bit. Seems like Major League playoffs or baseball playoffs are in full swing right now, and hardly a year goes by that you don't hear some mention of the Black Sox scandal fixing the World Series back in 1919. Nearly 100 years later, Charles Fountain has written the book, and he calls it The Betrayal, the 1919 World Series, and the birth of modern baseball. I'll tell you why he named it that and more right now. He joins us. Charles, thanks for being with us on NBC Sports Radio this morning.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure.
Who was betrayed the most in the Black Sox scandal? I think, again, this is almost a 100-year-old story. A lot of people know it's about Shoeless Joe Jackson and the White Sox and, you know, the mob or whoever got to them and we've seen the movies like Eight Men Out and got these guys to all go along with throwing the World Series. I mean, but who was really cheated the most? The players who never got their payoff money, the gamblers who lost it all, Shoeless Joe Jackson? Who was the big loser in this scandal?
You know, I think the answer to that question is yes, that, you know, certainly the fans were betrayed by the game, and not just the players, but by the governance of Major League Baseball that knew this was going on in their game for decades before the Black Sox scandal exploded. You know, the players were betrayed. They were betrayed by, you know, the criminal justice system and by people they thought were acting in their interest when this whole thing blew up. And of course they weren't. You know, the gamblers were betrayed. And if they don't get a little sympathy for that, it's still a piece of the story that keeps the story fascinating us, over these many decades. It's baseball's eternal mystery. We'll never know who was fully involved, what actually happened, because the participants themselves didn't know what was actually happening while it was going on.
Our guest is Charles Fountain. He's written the book, The Betrayal, about the 1919 World Series, the Black Sox, and the birth of modern baseball, as it is titled. I opened the book, looked at the contents, and immediately went to Chapter 10. It ain't true, is it, Joe? We've come to know that phrase a little differently over the years from the movies and such. Say it ain't so, Joe. But I guess the question is, did that moment with that young boy in the courthouse steps actually really happen, or was this the elaboration of a Chicago Herald writer?
That is, another of the eternal mysteries. And what I write in the book and the way I feel about it is it really doesn't matter. The writer in question here is Hugh Fullerton, who was a syndicated baseball writer, one of the most widely read baseball writers of his generation back then. Mm-hmm. And he printed the day after the grand jury, heard Joe Jackson and Eddie Seacott's confession in 1920. He wrote that as Joe Jackson was leaving the courthouse with a crowd on the courthouse steps, a little urchin, as he put it, came up to Joe and said, "It ain't true, is it, Joe?" And Jackson replies, "Yes, son, I'm afraid it is." And the kid says, "Well, I never would have thought it." Now, nobody else heard that. Nobody else reported it. And over the years, the popular consensus is that Hugh Fullerton made it up. But it really doesn't matter whether he made it up or not, because in that little scene that he paints is the whole sort of Black Sox encapsulated. It's a Shakespearean tragedy in miniature. There is, betrayal, hurt, a American hero knocked down from his perch, a little boy sort of standing for the nation's disappointment in all of that. And, what I say about it is whether he made it up or whether he reported it exactly as it happened, Hugh Fullerton nailed it with that little scene.
A real eye-opening part of the book is what the gambling culture surrounding the game of baseball was like at the time, nearly 100 years ago. It was happening, and it was happening in a major way, wasn't it?
Yeah, that the real surprise about the Black Sox scandal, when you really understand the culture of professional baseball at that time, is not that it happened, is not that eight players conspired to throw a World Series to another team. It's that it took so long to happen. That there were game-fixing incidents throughout, from the beginning of professional baseball back in the 1870s. It was particularly rampant back in the 1870s. They thought they had eliminated it, but with the coming of the, modern baseball, with the merger of the American and National Leagues in 1903, it really sort of started afresh. And there were all these little gambling and game-fixing brush fires throughout the first two decades that the governance of Major League Baseball, the national commission that was in place before the commissioner was hired in the wake of the Black Sox scandal, just winked at it, that they'd adopted a, you know, hear no evil, see no evil, speak no evil philosophy for dealing with this. Because if they dealt with it, it was going to be bad for baseball and bad for baseball business. If they ignored it, it may or may not. But rumors are bad, but, you know, rumors are nowhere near as bad as proof.
Yeah, right. The Betrayal, the 1919 World Series and the Birth of Modern Baseball is a book by Charles Fountain. Players were grossly underpaid in 1919, which is why approaching baseball players with a $20,000 bribe worked so well. Not a chance you could pull that off in today's game, though, right?
No. I mean, obviously the players are, compensated to a degree that they wouldn't fall prey to that temptation. But one of the things is you look at the sweep of modern sports today, particularly with, right now with fantasy sports in the headlines as much as they are. But you look at the whole culture of sport, and you look at the Super Bowl, and you look at the money that's bet on that. You look at the NCAA basketball tournament, and the brackets and pools and everything that are bet on that. That I think that the people who were involved in, cleaning up baseball, as they would have put it back in 1919, thought that they were putting gambling and professional sports behind them. But as the ensuing century has demonstrated, they were just sort of getting it launched. They were, this was just a one chapter in a long passage that goes from the Black Sox through the college game fixing scandals to the, the fantasy sports brouhaha that we're, dealing with right now.
Yeah. Another lasting effect of the scandal was the implementation of an overlord, I'll call it. We call that person the commissioner now. But this was really not done so much to police the game as much as it was to improve the public image so that baseball could get back to the business of making money again. Really, how long did baseball suffer after the Black Sox scandal?
Hardly at all. Baseball had a down year in 1917 with the First World War, and people were very alarmed that, baseball would, never bounce back from the setback that it had, the downturn in attendance that it had in 1917 and 1918. But it came roaring back in 1919, and it was equally popular in 1920, and even though this scandal broke at the end of the 1920 season, 1921 brought us Babe Ruth and his 59 home runs with the New York Yankees. So, that baseball really didn't miss a beat in all of this. The naming of the commissioner and the commissioner's sort of strong and harsh and unilateral punishment of the players, banning them for life, certainly put forth a an image that baseball had cleaned up its act. So the fans and the business were able to move on from the Black Sox scandal and think that, this was an anomaly and now it's all behind us. It wasn't quite an anomaly. There were still a couple of incidents after the Black Sox scandal. But the impression, the perception that the nation had was that, the cheaters are gone and baseball is once again pure and a game that we can celebrate.
Wow. And Babe Ruth to the rescue is what it wound up being with those 59 home runs in 1921. Great stuff. The book is called The Betrayal, the 1919 World Series and the Birth of Modern Baseball by Charles Fountain. Charles, have you got a Twitter account you want to plug?
Well, I've got to start tweeting. My Twitter handle is at Chuck_Fountain, and I've got to start putting some things out there and doing some, salesmanship on behalf of this book.
All right, that's Charles Fountain and the book, The Betrayal, the 1919 World Series and the Birth of Modern Baseball. You can pick that thing up in your favorite bookstore. So we thank Charles for being with us on the program this morning. Coming up next, Pete Fountain is going to join us. Pete Fountain. That was Charles Fountain. Pete Fox is going to join us next. It's Speaking of Sports on NBC Sports Radio and NBCSportsRadio.com. Nonstop game. That's what we got for you at NBC Sports Radio, NBCSportsRadio.com. Got a great mobile app for you. All you've got to do is go to the Google Play Store or maybe the iTunes Store where you like to buy that stuff. We got you taken care of there. Not only is it cool, but it's free. We like that, don't we, Pete Fox? Free. If it's free, I'll take three.
Free, it's me.
That's right. We all have our saying for that.
Free 99.
La Quinta Inns and Suites takes care of everything so you can take care of business. Book now at LQ.com or call 1-800-SLEEP-LQ. Sepp Blatter is in the news. And, you know, there's so much going on in the sports world that this maybe goes by somewhat unnoticed because there's so much NFL and the Major League Baseball playoffs. He is refusing to go quietly into the dark after he handed a 90-day suspension by the Ethics Committee at FIFA. That's what they handed him. He handed them something back. He filed an official appeal. Is this guy serious? I mean, it seems like the Swiss police are the latest ones to bring these charges against him, as well as the UEFA president, Michael Platini. Both of these guys are suspended for, I guess it's a minimum of 45 days. I don't know what that means, but the Swiss police investigation into corruption seems like, you know, we were talking about this guy going to jail. Now it's looked like he's being so defiant, he wants to even stay and be president.
Well, didn't he step down at one point? This story is very back and forth.
So odd.
Like, he stepped down, then he's like, I'm not stepping down. And then they're like, well, you're suspended, and now he's fighting this. So, yeah, it's corrupt to say the least.
And it's crazy to think that he would continue running that organization. You know, it seemed like, again, a month or a couple of months ago, like this guy was on his way to Handcuffville. Now I'm not so sure.
And then you got this guy, Bernie Ecclestone, the Formula One boss, who's saying that Sepp Blatter should remain in charge of FIFA despite facing corruption charges. And who's more corrupt than Bernie Ecclestone now? Sepp Blatter? No, Bernie's more corrupt.
Yeah, Bernie's kind of looking that way right now. You know, numbers are out. Forbes and USA Today. Forbes is really big on this, and USA Today is good on rehashing and make sure that we all see it. According to a USA Today list of the top paid college football coaches, Nick Saban is at the top, $7.09 million. Jim Harbaugh comes in second at $7.01 million. That's per season, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got the list of other guys. Ohio State's Urban Meyer's on there. Bob Stoops is on there. Jimbo Fisher's on there. USA Today goes on to report of the 128 Division I schools that the average pay $2 million a year.
Yeah, no, then that's the public schools. There are other coaches on that list, you know, like the USC coach,
mm-hmm.
That don't make that list because they're private institutions and they don't have to report it. But there's a lot of money. I think we went through this once before with going down the list of all the Alabama coaches and what they make, because there was a story out about a month or two ago, I think just before the season started, mm-hmm. about Alabama giving their assistants raises, Lane Kiffin and the like, because the Alabama offensive coordinator, whose name escapes me at the moment, he's the highest paid assistant in the game at like $1.3 million. Kiffin is just under $1 million at $900,000. And then you go down this list of all the other guys on that staff, like the strength and conditioning guy makes like $250,000 a year. It's crazy.
And still no compensation for the students. Still haven't figured out anything for the student athlete. I'm holding the fingers up here.
No, not yet. Well, I mean, now you're starting to hear more people, more college players are, you know, Miles Jack brought it up when he mm-hmm. decided that he was going to go to the NFL because he just said, I'm tired of walking around UCLA seeing people wearing my jersey and I don't get a dime for it.
Right. And you know what? He's absolutely right. They are. They've got to be able to work something out. I think we're moving in that direction, but it's just not happening fast enough. Have you heard about the Greenbrier Inn being haunted? Have you heard this
just
story?
Just from you. This
just
is
from
remarkable.
Me.
Remarkable.
It's crazy because the Cardinals players that are staying there are freaked out about this. I mean, the Arizona Cardinals, one of the safeties, Tony Jefferson, said that he heard a little girl's voice saying things. He goes, I'm not taking any chances. He goes, I'm leaving all the lights on. I got people staying in my room. He's not the only one that thinks the Greenbrier is haunted. A lot of his secondary teammates all feel the same way. Cornerback Gerard Power said that his wife read about it on the internet earlier in the week before they went and then asked a member of the Greenbrier staff, is it in fact true? Well, there's been more than one person to say that, so there's got to be some truth to it. Wait, what? What do you mean there's got to be some truth in the fact that it's haunted?
Yeah, well, there's a haunted hotel supposedly in Milwaukee that the Lakers stay in. Every time they go to play the Bucks, they stay in the same hotel, and they all tell the story about how that hotel is haunted, and they don't like it all that much. I was 20 years ago, probably, I worked at a hotel in San Diego which was reportedly haunted. It was a small little inn, and you know, people would tell stories about they're putting their keys on the fireplace, and they wake up in the morning, and the keys are all the way across the room. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of different stories about haunted hotels. I've never personally experienced any of that, but I think it would be cool.
There is a great one. There's a great one here in the LA area that I don't know if you're aware of. I've been here, you know, most of my life, so I know about this one. The Queen Mary.
Yeah.
The Queen Mary is supposed to be monstrously haunted. The pool area, the engine room, places that they won't let you go into the ship. I mean, it's supposed to be super haunted.
Yeah, I've stayed there a couple times. I haven't experienced anything. Maybe ghosts don't like me. I don't know.
Cornerback Patrick Peterson, Powers, Rashad Johnson, Honey Badger, all of those guys are sharing a suite at the Greenbrier. Four of them piled up in a suite.
Macho. That's
with
real
the
macho.
Lights on. Thank you, Pete Fox.
Yeah.
That's going to do it for Speaking of Sports. Thanks for having joined us here this morning. We appreciate that. Coop is coming up next. We'll check you next week in the Jim Daniels Show on Saturday morning. Have a great, great Sports Sunday. It's NBC Sports Radio and NBCSportsRadio.com.